tongue.
Can I see him?
He paused and seemed to mull it over before finally nodding.
Fine, but if anyone asks, your family,
he said, and still I could see the pity in his eyes. Obviously, I looked like a big enough mess that he was willing to risk getting disciplined by letting me in.
His wife is here,
I said, and the doctor's expression hardened a little.
Where?
I could practically feel his disapproval rolling off him. Whatever small amount of pity I'd managed to elicit in him was now gone. He pushed past me and disappeared into the waiting room. He wasn't happy with me, but he also hadn't said I couldn't go in and see Graham. Making my way unsteadily down the hall, I paused at the nurse's desk.
I'm here to see Graham Lance. I was told I could have a few minutes with him.
The nurse eyed me suspiciously. But whether it was the fact that I was still covered in Graham's blood or if I just looked that desperate, she nodded and pushed up from her seat behind the desk. Gesturing for me to follow her, she started down the corridor and paused outside a glass door. The blinds were shut, and it wasn't until she pushed open the door that I could hear the mechanical sound of the ventilator.
Julie, someone to see Mr. Lance,
the nurse said before allowing me to slide in through the small gap in the door. My heart stuttered in my chest as my senses were assaulted. The sterile smell in the room, the noise of the machines as they mechanically pushed air into Graham's lungs, the flashing on the monitors, numbers and bleeps as lights blinked up and down. And right in the middle of it all, Graham lay on his back, perfectly still. The machine next to him whooshed, and his chest rose and then fell once more. The nurse standing inside the door spoke to me, but she might as well have been calling to me from the other side of the world. Crossing the floor, I paused next to Graham's bed, staring down at him, a hint of a white bandage visible above the neckline of the hospital gown he wore.
Christ, Graham, I'm so sorry.
My words felt woefully inadequate, and they were. What was the point in being sorry now that the damage was done? If I'd been faster, better at my job, then maybe I'd have found the evidence we needed to get Dex to hand the case back to us. But I hadn't. I'd screwed up, and now Graham was paying the price. The demon mark on my shoulder began to burn, and I gritted my teeth against the pain. It was a price I should have paid. If John wasn't gunning for me, then he wouldn't have sent Graham half a case file. He wouldn't have been trying so hard to destroy me. Graham wouldn't have been his collateral damage. Gripping the edge of the bed, I squeezed the metal bars until my knuckles went white. John would pay for this. And whatever it was that had attacked Graham, I would make it wish it had never entered this world.
Excuse me, Mr. Lance's wife says you're not family?
The nurse called Julie tapped my shoulder, drawing my attention.
I'm his partner, this is all my fault, I said. Well, you can't be in here unless you're family,
she said again. This time her voice was a little firmer. Leaning down next to the bed, I ignored the sound of the machinery as it continued to keep Graham alive.
I meant what I said, Graham. If you leave me, I will follow you into death. This is not your time, so hurry up and get your ass better,
I said before straightening up and turning from the bed. The nurse shot me a dirty look as I pulled open the door and came face to face with Graham's wife. She took one look at me and instantly went into the hysterics. Her legs buckled beneath her, and I caught her in my arms as she dropped like a stone towards the floor. Of course, holding onto her as she flailed around like a dying fish, her hands catching the side of my face, her elbow jabbing into my rib cage hard enough to drive the air from my lungs as she wailed like a banshee, wasn't exactly easy.
What are you doing? Let her go immediately!
The man she'd called Henry commanded, hurrying down the floor towards me, the doctor I'd spoken to bringing up the rear. Her hand caught me again, her nails tearing down the side of my face the same way a cat might.
Henry, she killed him! Oh God, I told you she was a—
I let her go, dumping her onto the floor as her wails cut off as suddenly as they'd begun. I felt sorry for her. She knew Graham better than I did, so she had to care for him, but I couldn't understand her reaction. Her sudden and pronounced hatred of me didn't make any sense. Although how could I blame her? If I was in her shoes, I'd blame me too. Didn't I already feel responsible for what was going on? Leaving her in the capable and comforting grip of her Henry, I turned and strode down the hall, leaving her to pick her hysterical screaming up once more. At least she was in the right place. If she kept up her hysterics, they'd sedate her, and at least then she might feel relief. Chapter 8. Escaping out through the front doors of the hospital, I paused to drink in the cool evening air. The sound of running feet met my ears before I even had the chance to fully take in my surroundings.
Amber, can you tell us what condition Detective Lance is in?
Amber, what really happened down at the River Gardens?
Miss Morgan, is it true that the Elite could have prevented this if the mind of Detective Lance hadn't been so preoccupied with the upcoming trial of his daughter Jessica?
Miss Morgan, should the people of King City be worried by what escaped from the crime scene this morning?
Their questions came at me in a barrage of rapid fire, leaving me with no time to gather my thoughts, never mind actually contemplate what they were asking me. I stared at them, my mind grinding to a dead halt. What was I supposed to say? I didn't have the answers to their questions, and even if I did, my position with the Elite forbade me from sharing information with them that wasn't first approved by my superiors. Pushing out through the crowd of reporters, I kept moving, despite the fact that they kept on following me, their questions a never-ending whirlwind of pain and confusion.
Amber!
A familiar voice called out to me, and I lifted my gaze from the ground, where I'd firmly planted it, in an attempt to not make eye contact with the paparazzi vultures that surrounded me. Dex stood on the other side of the road, waving to me from the driver's side of his black car. Part of me wanted to ignore him, the same part of me that had wanted to kill him earlier in the day for the situation he'd allowed to happen. The more sensible side of me won out, and I broke free of the crowd of reporters, sprinting across the busy street to where Dex already had the engine running. Sliding into the passenger seat, I slammed the door behind and watched the reporters huff and puff on the other side of the road. Dex pulled away in a squeal of tires, car horns blaring as he cut up other oncoming traffic with his risky driving maneuvers. I fastened my seatbelt and stared out the window next to me as we drove in silence for several blocks. The quiet hum of the radio was comforting, and I found my eyelids growing heavy as we wound through the streets of King City's downtown area.
How is he?
Dex asked, finally breaking the silence between us. They've stabilized him, but he went into cardiac arrest on the operating table, I said, keeping my gaze firmly pinned on the moving landscape beyond the window.
Shit,
Dex said, pushing his free hand back through his blonde curls, causing them to stand on end.
If I'd known this was going to happen.
I shook my head and dropped my gaze to where my hands were knotted in my lap. This isn't your fault, Dex, not really. Sure, you should have listened. Contrary to popular belief, I don't do what I do to get ahead in the media. Looking good isn't really my aim.
And that makes you one of the unusual ones, Amber. Everyone else is always out for themselves, looking for that big case that will send their career into the stratosphere.
I smiled, but it wasn't a happy look, and I continued picking at my bloodied nails. I know, and this is the price, but I can't hold you responsible. Not when Graham knew the risks of this line of work.
So what the hell happened out there today? Because from the look on your face when that thing split wide open, I'm guessing you were as much in the dark as I was,
he said, hitting far closer to the truth than I was particularly comfortable with. I have no idea. All I do know is that it was strong enough to try and rip Graham apart. Dex swallowed hard and turned the wheel, taking us down another side street and bringing the car to a halt in front of a late-night coffee shop. One of those little places that usually saw hipsters as its normal clientele. Just the type of place I normally avoided like the plague. Dex glanced over at me and smiled apologetically.
You look like you could do with a cup of something hot and, well, this is the only place I know in the area that'll work.
I could have gone for something a little stronger, I said, jerking my thumb in the direction of the dive bar across the street. Dex gave me a surprised look before his face broke into a wide grin.
A woman after my own heart, then,
he said, not waiting for me to get out of the car as he hopped out. Suppressing a shudder, I pushed the thought of having to sit in the hipster coffee shop aside and grabbed onto the idea of getting a double whiskey. I wasn't much of a drinker, and I certainly didn't fit the usual Irish stereotype where my life revolved around my next binge session, but after the day I'd had, a drink was exactly what I needed. Something to settle my nerves. The tremors that had started in my knees and were slowly working their way up my body. I climbed from the car and started to cross the street as Dex locked the car and caught up, his stride long and easy as he fell into step next to me. I didn't look at him, but I could feel his gaze on me. He was obviously holding back, but I could sense his questions bubbling behind his lips like a shaken bottle of cola. Once he started, there would be no stopping him, and I wasn't ready for that until I had something dark and strong in my hands. Pushing into the bar, a large, meaty hand planted into the center of my chest, halting my progress. There was a spark of power to his touch. Not much, but it was there, and my own magic instantly responded, flaring along my skin without having to be called forth.
No teeny boppers. ID now.
I glanced up. The voice was gruff, and the owner of the voice matched it perfectly. There was a long, ragged scar that ran from the corner of his left eye and disappeared into his bushy ginger beard. Get your hand off me and I'll show you my ID, I said, the magic flaring across my skin making me edgier than I should have been. Gruff grinned at me and lifted his hand before sliding it beneath my chin and tilting my head back so he could see my face under the yellow light in the doorway.
And what are you? He asked.
The sudden interest in his voice made me uneasy, and I knew he'd felt my magic respond to whatever in hell he was.
Get your hands off her,
Dex said, suddenly stepping forward as he thrust his police badge into the face of the bouncer. The bouncer didn't seem to care that Dex was a cop. He swung his meaty fist up, the blow connecting with Dex's face before he had the chance to duck out of the way. With a groan, I moved into the fray, ducking beneath the bouncer's oncoming second punch and driving my hand up beneath his chin. He grunted, the sound of his jaw snapping shut and the telltale crunch of teeth crumbling beneath the force of the blow had him sprawling back against the door. Stay down or I'll arrest your sorry ass, I said, grabbing Dex and swinging him back out onto the street.
That's police brutality,
Gruff shouted after me, and I shot him the coldest smile I could muster over my shoulder. Lucky then that I'm an elite and not a cop, I said. The mere mention of what I was had the bouncer instantly rethink his position. He swallowed hard, his Adam's apple bobbing so hard that his beard ruffled with the motion.
What are you doing?
Dex asked, rubbing his hand across his jaw. It was already beginning to swell, and if he didn't put ice on it soon, it was going to be out like a balloon before the night was over. Getting you out of there before that guy beats the snot out of you?
I'm a cop, Amber. He can't do that. I need to arrest him.
Dex struggled against my grip, but it was merely a half-hearted attempt. Don't be more of an idiot than you already are. You barging in there like that, you were lucky he didn't knock your head completely off.
I was looking out for you. He had his hands.
I cut Dex off with a hard stare. Thanks and all, but I'm not some damsel in distress. If there's any saving of my ass to be done, then I'm more than capable of doing it myself. He seemed to struggle with the notion as I helped him cross the street towards the one place I really didn't want to go. But he needed ice, and we weren't going to get it from the dive bar. The light from the hipster coffee shop spilled out onto the street, and a couple that could barely keep their hands off each other stumbled into us as they pushed out through the glass front door of the cafe. Gritting my teeth, I ignored their strange stares as we stepped inside, and Dex slowly pulled out of my grip.
What the heck happened to you?
A loud female voice cut across the quiet babble, and I jerked my head up in time to see a willowy teenager launch herself between two tables and straight into Dex's arms.
Sarah, this is Amber, one of my colleagues,
Dex said, shooting me an apologetic grin as the young woman grabbed his face and jerked it up into the light.
Dex, what happened to your face? It looks like you lost a fight with the back of a bus.
I liked her already, and I tried to hide my smile behind my hand as she continued to pull and tug at him.
Amber, this is Sarah, my little but extremely annoying sister,
he said, with a long-suffering sigh that spoke of an affection that only an older brother could have. She gave me an assessing stare before nodding curtly.
You're so predictable, Dex. You're not even finished with Izzy 2 minutes when you pick yourself up another bed warmer.
Her words had me raising my eyebrows. A bed warmer was definitely not something I would describe myself as, and if the thought had ever occurred to Dex that we might mutually console each other, then I would be only too happy to tell him the truth.
Sarah, zip it. It's not like that. She works for the elite. We're working together on a case and... well, today was a crappy day.
There was something in Dex's tone of voice that made me soften. The tension I'd felt after hearing Sarah's statement drifted out of my shoulders once more, and I sucked in a deep breath as she gave me a second curious glance.
Now, please, can you just bring us 2 coffees?
Dex said, giving his sister his most winning smile. It was slightly lopsided, the swelling in his face already beginning to throw his features off in an almost comical way.
What sort of coffee? She asked. We've got espresso, Hawaiian Kona, Boca Sunrise, Peruvian Java, Colombian Dark Roast.
What about just ordinary coffee?
Dex said, his confusion evident.
Those are just ordinary coffees?
Then you pick one,
he said, starting towards a table near the back corner. Sarah started to shake her head, her long blonde hair whipping around her shoulders.
But how will I know which one you'll like?
Take a guess,
he said.
And you?
She asked, turning to me with a bright smile. The thought of picking one of the crazy coffees she'd named out left my head reeling. When had coffee stopped being just coffee?
Do you do tea?
Her smile widened, and I instantly regretted my words.
We've got lotus, chamomile, honeydew,
water. I'll have a water, I said, cutting her off before she could completely twist my head. She grinned at me and leaned in a little closer.
I take it this isn't really your scene?
I shook my head and gave her an apologetic smile in return. Not really. I'm a pretty simple soul, really.
I'll sort you out with something. You just sit, and if that brother of mine tries to pull any funny business, you have my complete permission to kick his ass.
Grinning, I turned away as she sauntered back up to the counter and started on the drinks. Making my way down through the close-fitting tables and chairs, I dropped onto one of the small armchairs next to Dex. I might not have been a fan of all the different drink choices, but I was definitely glad to get off my feet.
Sorry about that,
Dex said, cutting through my thoughts. About what?
Sarah, she's pretty nosy. Means well, but a complete pain in my ass,
he said, but I could hear the smile in his voice, and it made me open my eyes. Is she living at home? I asked.
No, she's going to college here in the city, so she's staying in the dorms on campus. Got herself the job here so she could have some extra money.
Very enterprising, I said, dropping my voice as I spotted Sarah weaving her way back down through the tables, a small tray balanced on one hand.
Right, one Colombian dark roast and an Irish coffee, she said with a smile as she set them down on the table.
I could already smell the telltale sweet scent of the whiskey in the Irish coffee, and I shot her a questioning glance.
You don't need to worry, we've got a liquor license, and Tim the barista makes the drinks, and he's over 21, she said without me needing to even open my mouth.
Wait, what was that about a liquor license?
Dex said, his gaze darting back and forth between us. I grabbed the Irish coffee with a smile and took a deep sip before Dex even had the chance to register what was happening. The creamy coffee and whiskey mix slipped down the back of my throat like silk, and I relaxed back into the chair as though someone had wrapped me in a warm hug. I wasn't much of a drinker, but that didn't mean I couldn't enjoy one when I really needed it.
Oh, come on, Sarah,
Dex said, screwing his face up as he took the first gulp of his drink.
This is beyond bitter. How does anyone drink this crap? It's worse than the sludge I can get down at the station.
Well, if you like it so much, get your coffee from there, she said with a wicked grin.
Sarah didn't hang around at the table, pushing the tray under her arm as she moved on to the next table and started cleaning away the empty cups and shredded sugar packets.
What did she give you?
Dex asked, leaning forward in his seat.
Something you're not getting your hands on? I said, gripping the cup a little tighter.
Typical. You women always stick together,
he grumbled, sniffing at his own cup. He looked young, far younger than he had earlier in the day, and I wanted to ask him how old he actually was. Graham had said he was the youngest cop to ever earn detective, and watching him over the rim of my cup, I could suddenly understand exactly what he meant. What happened after I left with Graham? I asked, finally breaking the comfortable silence between us. He sighed, and the happy-go-lucky glow of youth I'd seen in his eyes vanished, replaced with a world-weariness reserved only for those who had seen the very worst of what humanity had to offer.
The scene is a mess. They removed the bodies of the dead. Three other men ended up in the hospital. None as serious as Graham, luckily.
He swallowed hard and hid his gaze from mine. I didn't bother reprimanding him. What was the point? I already knew the guilt he carried over the situation. Laying even more of it on him would just be cruel, and that wasn't something I wanted to be. He'd made a mistake, a costly one, but as long as Graham pulled through, his mistake could always be fixed. More of the smoke escaped? I asked, sipping at my coffee carefully, and Dex nodded. It seemed like such an inadequate description for it, but I didn't know what else I was supposed to call it.
It wasn't demonic, I was convinced of that. But it was something along that line, and the faster I could figure it out, the better for everyone involved. The voice in the back of my head had gone quiet, but it chose that moment to suddenly throw up a name. Lily. After everything she'd already done, it made sense that she could be behind the bodies in the river gardens. Had she summoned something to this world to do her dirty work for her? She'd already proven she was into using lesser creatures as her minions.
You just thought of something. What was it?
I jerked, the liquid in the cup sloshing against the sides. Getting lost in my own thoughts while sitting next to an already suspicious cop was not a smart move. If Graham believed him to be clever, then I needed to watch myself around him. Letting my guard down and getting caught with my magic hanging out for the world to see, well, it was a one-way ticket to the executioner's block, and I didn't fancy dying just yet. Just contemplating what it could be, I said. Staying as honest as possible was the only way I could throw him off. The second he thought I was lying, well, it would be the moment he decided to start digging a little deeper into my background. It's not demonic, but I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah, well, you're pretty new at the elite, he said with a grin. So I don't suppose you're gonna know everything.
I smiled back at him, but I could feel the tension curling in my stomach. He'd already checked me out. New, but I did the same training as everyone else.
I know that, but there's no substituting experience.
There was something in the way he said the word experience that had the hairs on the back of my neck standing on end. Was I being paranoid? He couldn't possibly know anything about me, smart cookie or not. I'd given him no reason, as far as I was aware, to make him think I was anything more than I appeared to be. Unless he'd seen what I'd done to the forensic guy. I studied him a little closer as I finished my drink and pushed to my feet. Thanks for the coffee and the ride out of the media circus, I said, zipping my leather jacket up the front of myself.
You're leaving? I can give you a ride home,
he said, eyeing his practically untouched coffee with disgust. No, the walk will do me good, and I need a chance to clear my head, I said, dropping a $10 note on the table.
You sure?
I smiled and nodded again. Yeah, plus I think your sister needs a ride more than I do, I said, gesturing to Sarah, who seemed to be politely attempting to fend off two overly friendly customers. Dex glanced back at her, and his expression instantly changed.
I'll drop by the elite office tomorrow, so...
he said, but his voice said he was preoccupied as he pushed onto his feet and started across the room. I watched him walk away, the set of his shoulders suggesting he was about to hulk out on the two idiots pushing their luck. Sarah spotted him, and I watched her expression change from one of polite irritation to outright panic as she shook her head. Smiling, I headed for the door and pushed out into the night air.
We weren't doing anything wrong, dude. Butt out.
The voice of one of the jerks carried across the coffee shop and out through the swinging door. Laughter bubbled up the back of my throat as the door closed behind me and blotted out whatever Dex said to them. He might have been an issue for me, his curiosity and investigative abilities a little too sharp for my predicament, but he was a good guy, and Sarah was lucky to have an older brother that doted on her the way he seemed to. At least someone had a sibling that genuinely cared. Chapter 9. The air was warm. August was apparently going to live up to its usual promise in King City. There would be no sleeping beneath the duvet, that was, even if I could get to sleep after everything that had happened. Cutting down a side street off the main thoroughfare, I picked up my pace. All I wanted was to get home and shower. I hadn't really thought of anything else beyond scrubbing the blood out from underneath my nails and putting on fresh clothes. When the morning had started, spending the day in blood-soaked clothes hadn't exactly been on my radar. A glass bottle skittered across the tarmac, and my pace faltered as I glanced behind me. I couldn't see anything. The streetlights were dull, causing shadows to stretch out across the seemingly empty road. But as I searched the area, what I couldn't see with my eyes, I could instead feel. Magic made the air heavier, and I could feel it pressing on my skin like an oppressive hand. The urge to run coursed in my veins. My human instincts telling me that whatever was following me in the dark wasn't something I wanted to mess with. But there was another part of me, a darker side, that wanted to stay and play. And by play, I mean it wanted to rip whatever was coming for me limb from limb. I'd never considered myself to be a particularly violent person. The crime scenes were always way too gruesome for my taste. So where the sudden urge to spill blood had come from, frankly, was scaring the shit out of me. Something growled in the dark, and I balled my hands into fists. My hesitation had obviously cost me whatever advantage I might have had. The sound was far too close, and there was no way I would outrun whatever was slowly advancing on me through the shadows. "I don't want to fight you," I said, calling out into the darkness naively, hoping it would be enough to make whatever creature was stalking me give up and walk away. Something moved in the darkness, sliding between the shadows, its yellow eyes glowing in the dim light of the streetlights as it never took its gaze from me. He stepped out of the shadows, and I felt the tension coursing through my body ratchet up several notches. The bouncer from the club watched me with his yellow eyes, and I knew they hadn't been that color in the doorway of the dive bar. It wasn't the type of thing to go unnoticed.
"Alone at last,"
he said, his voice a low growl that seemed to reverberate up through his massive frame. "Unless you want to spend the night in a cell, I'd turn tail and run." "Wolf," I said, my own voice carrying across the space between us.
"I don't take kindly to little girls thinking they're bigger and badder than I am."
He took a threatening step forward, or at least I was pretty sure he was trying to threaten me. Shapeshifters were normally the types to avoid confrontation. They could definitely fight, and their speed and agility made them the perfect candidates to play the role of bodyguards and general muscle. But unlike the vampires, they preferred to keep out of the limelight, usually only coming out into the open if they'd gone rogue. I laughed, the sound bouncing around the enclosed space of the alley, causing him to falter.
"I'm glad I amuse you. Will you laugh as I rip your guts out of your soft underbelly?"
He didn't wait for an answer. Obviously, my laughter had escalated the situation, and he charged across the small space between us, giving me only a split second to react. I wasn't going to outmaneuver him, especially not when it came to speed and strength, and if he wrapped his hands around me, well, I knew from sparring training at the Elite Academy that he would have enough power to rip my head clean off. Ducking to the side, I threw my body forward into a roll, coming back up with my athame ready in my hand. He growled, already turning as he lunged for me once more. His clawed hand tore across the front of my chest as I hopped back and brought my blade up through his arm. Pain bloomed across the front of my body, and I swallowed it back. Reacting to the pain would only drive him on. It was the usual predator-prey drive, and there was no way in hell that I was going to be his prey tonight. Lifting his head, I watched as he scented the air and then grinned, his human teeth replaced with a mouthful of wickedly sharp wolf ones.
"I smell your blood,"
he said, his yellow eyes glinting with excitement. "And I can see yours," I said, gesturing to the thick blood dripping down my dagger onto the ground.
"You smell sweet. When I eat your heart, will your magic become mine?"
I didn't answer him. There was no point. All he was trying to do was throw me off my game. Instead, I focused in on him, watching his body for the slightest twitch or tremor that would tell me where he was going to move to next. He might have been bigger, stronger, and faster, but I was trained and he wasn't. He moved, his body shifting into a blur as he barreled towards me. I'd seen it in the flex of his muscles and neatly sidestepped him, bringing my dagger up and drawing it down his side. The rumbling roar of his pain tore at my eardrums. He might not have felt the blade entering his arm, but the gash I'd just opened up down the side of his body with my silver athame was something he couldn't ignore. He dropped to the ground and roared again, slamming his fists into the road as he twisted his head up to look at me.
"I'll kill you for that,"
he said, his voice wet, and I couldn't help but wonder just how deep I'd allowed my blade to go. My intention had been to wound, to put him down, not kill him. Glancing down at my hand, I realized the blade was coated in blood, all the way up over the hilt, making my grip on it slippery. The blood was still warm, but it was rapidly starting to cool in the night air. "Shit," I said, letting the blade slip from my fingers and clatter noisily to the ground. The part of me I'd felt earlier, the part that wanted to rip the wolf limb from limb, was actually excited by the feel of his blood on my hands, and my stomach rolled at the realization. What the hell was wrong with me? Scrubbing my hand down my jeans, I quickly pulled my cell phone from my pocket when the sound of the wolf's laughter made me pause.
If you're calling the paramedics, don't bother. I'll be healed by the time they get here.
The blade was silver, I said, eyeing him suspiciously as my finger hovered over the call button. He shrugged, the movement causing his face to scrunch up in pain.
So? You didn't leave any silver in the wound, and I'm not exactly a runt. Something like this isn't going to keep me down for long, and when it passes, I'll be only too happy to show you what true pain is.
As though to emphasize his point, he stretched. His joints popped as his entire body rolled and shifted. From where I stood, it looked like his back was made of water and there was a wave running straight down the center of it. The sound of bones snapping and realigning filled the air, and his clothes tore as his body shifted.
Ah, crap, I said, more to the air than anyone nearby, and the wolf grinned at me as his face became elongated.
Run, little girl. The chase will make you taste all the sweeter.
The way he spoke out through his half-human, half-wolf face was beyond creepy, and this time I took him at his word. Scooping up my knife, I darted down the alley. I wasn't far from home, and he wasn't fully shifted. All I needed to do was outrun him. How hard could it be? Once in wolf form, he'd only have 2 extra legs. Crap, I said again, and picked up my pace. Chapter 10. Air burned in my lungs. I really needed to train harder, do more cardio for these sorts of situations. My legs were beginning to ache and my heart hammered in my chest, the noise of it filling my ears, making it impossible to hear anything else. I was a member of the elite. The last thing I was supposed to do was run away from a fight, but I wasn't an idiot either. This wasn't a fight that would end well. One mistake on my behalf and he would kill me. One mistake on his behalf and I would be left with no choice but to kill him. Darting out through the mouth of the alley, I dashed through the late-night traffic. The sound of screeching tires and panicked screams told me the wolf was closing in on me. Despite knowing they existed, people weren't really used to seeing shifters roaming the streets of King City, especially when the shifter was 3 times the normal size of a wolf and had the single-minded determination of a psychopath. My cell phone buzzed in my pocket and I whipped it out. Nick's name pulsed on the screen, and I answered without breaking my stride.
Now is really not a good time, I said, my voice high and breathy as I crossed into the next street and rounded the corner onto my own road.
You're running?
Nick said. The smile in his voice at some other time might have been cute, but not when I was running for my life. Shifter, wolf, and he is pissed.
Rogue? Wait, who's chasing who?
The sudden concern for my well-being was overlooked as something large and hairy crashed into my back. The phone clattered to the ground, breaking apart into pieces as I scrambled to climb to my feet once more. Gruff, as I'd decided to call him in my head, had hopped out past me, his momentum carrying him forward, but that didn't last. From my knees, I jerked my head up and watched him eyeing me, the intelligence in his wolf eyes sending a shiver down my spine. There was a glint in them that no true animal could recreate. Sliding my hand down to my weapons holster, my hand closed around my gun. The bullets were lead with silver casings. The real silver bullets only came out when an execution order was handed down, and they weren't the ones the elite usually used for rogue shifters. A rogue shifter was notoriously hard to take down. They almost never felt pain, and only a sawn-off shotgun at close range loaded with silver buckshot cartridges were known to stop them. Once fired, the shot would break apart and spread through the shifter's body, systematically shutting down their vital organs. A death at the end of a bullet like that, I could only imagine, was excruciating. Of course, I'd never hunted a rogue shifter before, and I'd certainly never had to put one down. The only hands-on experience I even had with them had all been done in the safe confines of the academy. What I was dealing with now, well, although he was a shifter, he definitely wasn't rogue. He knew exactly what he was doing. He launched himself towards me, and I ripped my gun from its holster, aiming it for the broad width of his body. I pulled the trigger twice, the crack of the gunshot ripping the air. The shifter's howling scream as both bullets landed in their target was enough to set the hairs on the back of my neck standing on end. He hit the ground, and still he crawled towards me, pain now clouding his yellow eyes.
If you move another inch, I'm going to empty my shotgun into your ass.
Nick's voice cut over the panting sound the wolf was making. I jerked my head up in surprise and watched him approach slowly. He was as good as his word. The shotgun he held in his arms was leveled directly at the shifter, and if he fired, he would take off its entire hindquarters. The shifter's fur rolled and spilled outwards from its body, replaced with a sudden rush of human skin. He groaned, his bones sliding beneath his skin as though there was nothing there to connect them, and I felt my stomach roll as I watched his joints shift and pop back into place. I held my gun steady in a two-handed grip, keeping it trained on the shifter as his eyes rolled in his head. "Where did you come out of?" I said to Nick, keeping my gaze trained on the creature in front of me. He'd already proven that he could overcome injury faster than I'd ever thought possible for a shifter, and I wasn't about to make that mistake twice.
"I was at your apartment when I called. I thought you'd be back,"
he said, cautiously moving around the naked guy on the ground.
"When I heard you running, well, I put two and two together, and I could hear the shouting from outside your door."
I chanced to look in his direction, and he was smiling, the dimple in his cheek visible even under the poor streetlights. I'd gotten so close to actually making it home when the shifter had caught up to me. I wasn't as slow as I'd first imagined, but I still hadn't been fast enough to outrun him. Obviously, I definitely needed to hit the gym harder. The grip I had on the gun was beginning to make my arm ache, and I lowered it slowly. "Can I borrow your cell? I really need to call this in," I said to Nick.
"Already done. I told you I could hear it from up the street. I called the elite as soon as I knew what was going on. They're on their way down here with a crew, but they've missed all the fun."
"Yeah, great fun," I said, wincing as the adrenaline started to leave my body, every ache and bruise finally beginning to make itself known to me. As I moved, my shredded leather jacket rubbed against the scratch marks down the front of my chest, and I bit down on the string of curses that formed in my mouth. Cleaning and bandaging it was going to burn like a son of a bitch. Holstering my gun, I asked, "You got this?" I gestured to the moaning guy still lying on the ground, and Nick simply nodded, keeping his shotgun trained on its target. Approaching the fallen man, I gripped his shoulder and flipped him over onto his back. The two neat bullet holes in his shoulder and stomach smoldered as blood oozed from the wound. Someone was going to have to fish the bullets out of him, and there was no way in hell I was volunteering for that job. "Not so hot at healing now," I said, the sound of sirens splitting the air.
"I'll make you pay for this,"
he said through gritted teeth, and I shook my head. There was no way he was going to make anyone pay now. This was a definite death sentence. The courts would instantly look at him as a liability, a loose cannon, and although I was certain he wasn't rogue, there wasn't a judge in the country who would take that risk. The street lit up with the blue lights of the elite emergency response truck, and I took a step back from the guy on the ground. He was their problem now. Tomorrow would be soon enough to sort the paperwork out. Stephen Myrtle hopped out of the truck, the flash of the blue light illuminating him in his full riot gear uniform. I recognized him from around the office, and I knew he was close friends with Anthony the Machine.
"Where is it, Morgan?"
he asked, taking a cursory glance at the man lying at my feet. "You're looking at him," I said, gesturing to Gruff, who was still gritting back his huffing breaths of pain.
"This is the rogue?"
Stephen asked, his face a mask of confusion as he approached Gruff. "Yeah, he attacked me over on Crescent. I got as far as here before I was forced to draw my weapon and shoot him." I kept my voice as matter-of-fact as I could. There was not a chance in hell that I was going to let him know that I'd gotten dragged into a hand-to-hand fight, that I'd wounded him and then run. I wasn't exactly the most popular among the men of the elite. If they heard I ran from a fight, they wouldn't congratulate me for doing the smart thing. I'd be branded a coward. And in the elite, a coward was the last thing you wanted to be. The look Stephen gave me was a skeptical one, and I sighed. He crouched down next to Gruff, staring down at the wound pattern. I started to speak, but it was already too late. Gruff lunged upwards, wrapping a half-human, half-clawed hand around Stephen's neck and dragging him down towards his waiting mouth. Stephen let out a half-strangled scream as Gruff bit down on him. I pulled my gun once more and fired off another round, but Gruff dragged Stephen down over him, using his body as a shield.
"I don't have a clear shot, Amber,"
Nick shouted, moving around the screaming and flailing body of Officer Stephen. Adrenaline coursed in my veins once more as several more elite officers arrived on the scene. I darted forward, keeping my gun low as I struggled to find a weakness in Gruff's cover. Just as I reached the two struggling men, Steven surged upwards, his body crashing into mine and knocking me to the ground beneath his weight. The sound of gunfire filled the air as Steven jerked and gurgled on top of me, blood pouring from the wound in his neck. I could feel a wet heat spreading out across the front of my clothes. Rolling him to one side, I propped myself up and surveyed the scene. Gruff lay face down at the end of the street, utterly still, and I knew without having to ask that he was already dead. Nick stood a few feet away, one side of his face a bloody mess and the short barrel of his shotgun bent up at the snout. Turning back to Steven, I pressed my hand to his neck, but his eyes were already glassy and the twitching movements of his body were the involuntary movements of the dead. Shit, I swore, balling my hands into fists as I dropped back onto the road.
Morgan, is he?
One of the officers called out to me, but he didn't need to finish his sentence. The look on my face was obviously all the answer they needed. It seemed one shitstorm in a day just wasn't enough, and in my line of work, well, it was only a matter of time before people started dying. Chapter 11. The last of the blue lights receded and a hollow ache opened up in the middle of my body. There was always so much needless death. Why the shifter had decided to come after me, well, it just didn't make any sense. He'd known I was an elite. I hadn't kept it a secret after he'd punched Dex, so why attack me? Of course, there had been the odd way he'd looked at me, as though he could see through all of my pretenses to what I truly was. Although I hadn't heard of anyone having this ability before, there was still so much I didn't know and understand about what I was. Perhaps if I could feel his flavor of magic, he had felt mine? I shuddered at the thought. It seemed like an altogether too personal thing to be sharing willy-nilly with strangers, but still not impossible. Turning back towards my apartment block, I came face to face with Nick. There was a long cut down one cheek, and it had clearly been caused by the shifter. The edges of the mark were far too clean for anything else. "You need to get that seen to," I said, gesturing gently to his face.
"I'm not the only one,"
he answered with a grin, but there was a faint flicker of a flinch around his eyes that told me it hurt to smile. "I've got stuff back at the apartment, and you did say you had something you wanted to tell me," I offered, moving past him on the road. He fell into step next to me, our silence an easy one. At least that was one good thing. With Nick, I knew exactly where I stood. He liked me. I had no idea how much, but he certainly didn't allow it to interfere with the working relationship we'd formed. Nick was a professional. Personal relationships or thoughts did not matter if he had a mission to fulfill, and more often than not, he had a mission. Of course, it helped that we knew the truth about each other. I knew he was a player, and he knew I was a witch. Perhaps I knew a little bit more of the truth than he did, but in the end, it all boiled down to the same thing, or at least that was what I was telling myself. My chest ached as I pushed open the door of the apartment block and headed straight for the stairs. The thought of standing in an elevator, if it was even working, didn't sit well with me. The last thing I wanted was to get trapped in an enclosed space. Even though I knew the shifter was dead, I couldn't shake the ill feeling that filled the pit of my stomach, and it was that same trusting of my gut instinct that had kept me alive so far. Nick didn't say a word as we climbed the stairs, and I was grateful for that. All I really wanted to do was climb into bed and pretend the world didn't exist anymore, but he had information, and that wasn't something I could afford to ignore. Reaching the apartment door, I slid the key into the lock and jiggled it around. Ever since Graham had burst into my apartment to rescue me from Nick, the door hadn't really recovered. The memory of our first meeting was enough to make me smile before the tears started. Graham wouldn't be bursting in the door to save me anytime soon. Not when he was lying in a hospital bed with a machine keeping him alive. That thought alone was enough to bring the entirety of the day's grief down on top of me, and I jammed my hand into my mouth in an attempt to stifle my sob.
"What's wrong?"
Nick asked, catching my arm and swinging me back to face him. I tried to shrug free of his grip, but he held on, grabbing my hand and drawing it away from my face as he peered down at me.
"Amber, how hurt are you? Tell me what's wrong."
I shook my head and finally broke away, moving further into the apartment as though I could get away from my own feelings and emotions, somehow outrun them and leave them behind.
"It's not that. I'm fine, it's..."
I cut off at the thought of Graham lying so still on the ground, no rise and fall of his chest to tell me he was going to be all right.
Then what is it?
Nick asked, following me inside and closing the door behind him.
There was an issue today. Graham is...
My voice faltered.
I was being an idiot. I was behaving as though he was dead when in reality he was fighting to stay alive.
It was all over the news, but I didn't realize it was...
He cut off and dropped his gaze to the floor.
Is he...
No, he's alive. But they have him on a ventilator. He was hurt pretty bad. The creature tried to tear his heart out, left him with a lot of internal bleeding.
Nick nodded and then closed the distance between us, his hand brushing softly against the side of my face as he cupped my cheek with his palm.
He'll be fine, Amber. He's a fighter. There's no way some freak of nature is going to take him down, not without him taking it with him.
His voice was soft and comforting, and I pressed my face into his touch, allowing his warmth to spread through me. The practically non-existent gap between our bodies suddenly felt like a gulf. Lifting my face to his, I stared up into his eyes, the color drawing me in. Color flooded my face as I remembered the last time I'd tasted his lips. Well, first and last. He'd kissed me with a possessive ferocity that had stolen my breath and left my knees weak. I wanted to feel that again. I wanted to feel anything but the cold, hollow ache in the middle of my chest. His face dipped to mine, almost as though he could read my mind, and I wrapped my hands in the front of his jacket, drawing his body to mine. The shrill of his cell phone had us both dive apart as though we'd been caught with our hands in the cookie jar. Get a grip, Amber, you're an adult. If you want to kiss him, hell, if you want to take him to bed, you can. No one is going to stop you, and no one is going to care. The voice in the back of my head spoke up, filling my head with all sorts of debauched images, the kind that sped my heart and brought heat to my cheeks. But the voice was wrong if it thought no one was going to care. I would. I liked Nick. If I was perfectly honest with myself, I liked him a hell of a lot. Too much to risk screwing everything up. We had a good thing going. He was an ally I couldn't do without. And now that Graham was hurt, Nick was suddenly even more important to me. He was one of the only ones in this whole giant mess who knew what I was, and he didn't judge me for it.
Sorry,
he said, grabbing the phone and staring down at the screen. I watched him hang up on the number and quickly tap out a message on the screen before returning his attention to me.
Amber, I...
He started to speak, and a wave of nausea washed over me.
I'll get the bandages and antiseptic. Grab a seat, I won't be a minute, I blurted out, cutting his words short.
He stared at me in confusion, and I spun away from him, racing from the room in my attempt to get away.
Great job, Amber. If your plan was to not screw it up, I think you failed miserably,
I muttered to myself as I gathered up the items we'd need in the bathroom. Sucking in a deep breath, I forced my nerves to settle. I could do this. Of course I could. I'd fought a shifter and lived to tell the tale. This would be a cakewalk. Christ, I just wished I could convince even myself.
Chapter 12.
Carrying the contents of the first aid kit back into the room, I paused in the doorway and watched Nick silently. He stood with his back to me, his broad shoulders tense as he stared down at the only picture I had in the living room. It was the only one I'd managed to salvage of my mother and father. I'd never understood why my mother had burned all of his pictures until Lily had brought all of my memories crashing back down around my ears. Now it made perfect sense. If I'd been in her position and found out my husband had a whole other secret family that he was leaving me for, burning pictures would be the least of it. I blinked back the memory of what had happened that night, my father's screams echoing inside my head as I stepped into the room and cleared my throat.
Is this your parents?
Nick asked, his gaze never leaving the picture, the edges of it in the gilt frame charred. I'd lifted it straight from the fire and my mother hadn't stopped me. Part of me couldn't help but wonder now if she'd let me do it because she was afraid of me.
Yeah, before it fell apart.
They looked happy,
he said, finally turning toward me.
I don't really know. My dad was clearly one of the great pretenders. I'm not sure if you could ever tell what he was truly feeling or thinking.
Well, he looks happy, and so does your mom.
I smiled and dumped my haul onto the couch. She was. She loved him, and he broke her heart. Now get over here so I can look at your face. I cringed inwardly even as the words left my mouth. The smile Nick gave me told me he knew exactly what I'd meant, but he wasn't the type to let an opportunity pass him by.
Why? Do you want to paint me?
He asked, giving me his best trout pout pose. Laughter bubbled up out of me, the movement causing pain to flare along the gouges on my chest. Wincing, I covered my mouth with my hand and sat down on the couch. Nick's smile disappeared, and I knew he'd seen my discomfort. Closing the gap between us, he dropped to his knees and rifled through the packs of gauze and sterile water on the couch next to me.
Let me see, Amber. We'll patch you up first.
His voice was soft, gentle even, and it seemed at odds with who I knew him to be. He was a hunter, a complete playboy, and yet as he peeled back what was left of my leather jacket, I couldn't help but notice the look on his face, the utter concentration and delicacy of his touch as he ripped open some of the sterile water packs and soaked the gauze in it before carefully cleaning the wound across my front. It didn't hurt. Part of me had expected it to, but I didn't feel anything as he worked. Instead, I continued to watch him. This was a side to Nick I'd never thought existed. Granted, I didn't know him that well, but the image he portrayed to everyone else was that nothing ever touched him. Staring down at him now, I wanted to know more about him. I wanted to know his story.
Why did you start hunting?
I asked, my voice soft. He glanced up at me, and the flash of emotion that crossed through his eyes, I couldn't place it.
It just seemed like the right thing to do.
His words were a warning, and yet this was something I couldn't leave alone. There was so much I didn't know about him, so much I wanted to find out, and that wasn't going to happen with me biting my tongue every time I was around him. You know everything about me. Hell, you know more about me than most of my family. No one falls into this line of work. We all have our reasons.
And some reasons should stay hidden,
he said, and this time there was no mistaking his tone of voice.
I don't want to talk about it.
I swallowed back my questions. As much as they burned at me, and I so desperately wanted to know more about where he'd come from, if he wasn't ready to share, then I wasn't going to be the asshole that pushed him out the door. He dropped back onto his knees and admired his handiwork.
I think you'll live,
he announced. All the warning from his voice was gone, but I could still detect the hint of an edge. He expected me to carry on pushing the topic with him. What did you want to tell me? I asked, straightening up and shrugging free of my jacket.
What?
He sounded genuinely confused, and the look on his face made me smile. You came here looking for me. You said you had something to share with me, and I can only assume it had something to do with Lily. He recovered quickly and nodded before climbing to his feet.
Yeah, I just wanted to tell you that she seems to have gone to ground. No one has seen or heard anything about something like her. It's as though she never existed.
Well, we both know that's impossible. She's a plan, and if she's gone quiet, then it's only because she has something else that's more pressing right now.
Are you sure the demon didn't kill her? I mean, he was pretty badass, and it did take a joint effort from us all to even slow him down.
I'm certain, I said, and I was. The demon might have been badass. Where the demonic was concerned, it was simply par for the course. But she was a different kind of deadly, and one pesky demon wasn't going to take her out of the game.
Well, I'm not going to question how you're so sure, but there's something else.
I sat up a little straighter and shot him a curious glance.
The case you're working on, I think I might have a lead.
I steadied myself against the couch, my fingers digging into the soft cushions as I fought the urge to hop up from my place, grab him by the front of his shirt, and shake him until he spilled his secrets. I barely understood what was going on, and I'd seen it happen. How the hell could he possibly know what was happening? Are you going to share it with me or keep me guessing?
I was at Sanctuary a couple of nights ago.
I shot him a surprised look. She still allows you in? I'd have thought fraternizing with me would be enough to earn you a ban. Nick grinned and shook his head.
Nope. What can I say? Madeline has taste.
Is that what they're calling that these days? Snorting back a laugh, I bit my tongue to keep from quipping back my true thoughts on Madeline and her taste. The last time I'd met her, she'd tried to drink my magic from me the way normal people drank a tall glass of water. Since then, seeing her as anything but the threat that she so clearly was more than a little difficult.
If you just apologized to her, then there wouldn't be such a problem. You'd be welcome into Sanctuary just like everyone else.
Apologize? Christ, Nick, that shifter hit you harder than I thought.
I know you two have your differences, but—
She tried to steal my magic. She practically tried to drain me.
But she didn't.
Only because I was able to stop her. There's no way I'm apologizing to that fae— I cut myself off before I cursed her. That was the funny thing about curses and magic. They had a nasty habit of coming back to bite you in the ass, particularly if you didn't know exactly how to word it, and that was something I was not a master at. I didn't like Madeline, but she'd certainly cut me a wide berth since our little run-in, and I wasn't going to run the risk of bringing her full wrath down on my head all because I wanted to burn off some steam and score verbal points against her.
She's a powerful ally to have, Amber. You and I both know that. If you swallowed some of your pride, you'd have a lot more answers.
Nick's words stung, and they hung in the air between us like a bad smell. What the hell did he mean, anyway? I knew when to swallow my pride, and this situation was not it. Look, I'm pretty tired and I have to be up in a couple of hours, so I'd really appreciate you sharing. The look he shot me was anything but friendly, and the air suddenly sang with tension. I swallowed past it and rolled my shoulders to try and shake off the worst of it all. You're welcome to crash on the couch, I said, attempting to soften my bitter words, but the damage was already done.
I just thought you'd like to know that there are rumblings of witchcraft, but not like anyone has ever seen. This stuff is new, and it's more a mishmash of different flavors.
What, like Lily? He shook his head and moved for the door.
No, not like your sister. Like someone amateur got bored and decided to experiment.
So they don't even know what they're doing? Nick shrugged and reached the front door.
No idea. That's your job, hotshot.
Tugging open the door, he disappeared out into the hall before I could say anything else to him. Watching him leave, I felt my thanks drying on my tongue. I'd well and truly screwed everything up, just like I always did. Obviously, my ability to deal with the monsters did not extend to my personal life. Where that was concerned, I didn't need any creature feature turning it into a car wreck. That was something I could do all on my own. Chapter 13. Lying beneath the bed covers, heat spread up over my legs and up my stomach. Rolling away from it wasn't an option. It didn't matter what position I tried to find for myself. Everywhere I went, the heat followed me. Was I just dreaming it? The heat reached my ears, and the first faint crackle set my heart hammering in my ribcage. My eyes flew open, and I scrambled up the bed in an attempt to get away from the fire that was eating its way across my bedspread. Shit, I said, rolling free of the bed and landing with a thud on the floor, my mind instantly transporting me back to the night the vamp had attacked me. Without thinking about it, I glanced upwards at the place where I knew the black magic mark had been. The white paint I'd used to try and cover it up seemed more transparent than usual, almost as though the mark itself refused to be covered and was slowly sliding out through the micro gaps in the paint. The bed was well and truly on fire, and I swore again as I grabbed the covers and dumped them on the floor, folding them over on themselves as I tried to smother the flames. Working fast, I stamped at the smoldering mess, causing the billowing smoke to fill the room. With the flames finally out, I stared around the room. What the hell was happening to me? First, the creepy feeling I'd had when I'd tangled with the shifter, the urge to bathe in his blood, had been one that had left me feeling more than a little weirded out. And now this? I could understand it if I was in danger, but there was nothing here but me. The apartment was silent around me, just the usual sounds of the building settling, the creaking of wood, and the familiar rattle of the elevator far off in the distance. Nothing. I was alone. Dropping onto the end of the bed, I buried my face in my hands. Life had never been this complicated. It had been bad, but not like this. At this rate, I didn't need to worry about my sister or a demon coming to finish me off. I would do it all by my lonesome. Crossing the room, I searched the bedside locker for my phone. There was one person I could call. The events of the day hit me like a punch to the chest, and I choked on the emotion that welled inside me. My cell phone was smashed, broken when the shifter knocked me on my ass, but that wasn't what hurt. There was one person I could call. Graham. But even if I had my phone, he wouldn't be answering his anytime soon. I wanted to feel sorry for myself, to bury myself beneath the remnants of my blankets and blot out the rest of the world. But that wasn't going to help Graham. It wasn't going to help me get to the bottom of what was going on, and it sure as heck wouldn't help me catch the people responsible for putting him in the hospital. Crossing to my closet, I pulled out the first pair of black jeans my hand closed around. They fell out into my hands, a bottle green t-shirt tumbling out after them. I grabbed that too. It looked clean, if a little unfamiliar. It had been a while since I'd gone to the laundromat, and I was having to dig into the back of my closet to find clean clothes. Clothes that, judging by the level of unfamiliarity I had with them, I hadn't worn in years. Tugging them on, I fought with the jeans. They were more than a little snug. Clearly, there was a reason I hadn't worn them in a while. Dragging out my gym bag, I scooped up my keys and headed for the front door. I needed to do something. I'd let Graham down, and there was only one thing I could really do to try and make it up to him. If I couldn't sleep, then I was going to go and see Jessica. And if she didn't want to see me, then I was going to train. The last thing I really wanted to do was see her, but I owed Graham that much at least. And I had a sneaking suspicion that her mother wouldn't have told her what had happened to him. It was the one and only thing I could do. And if I failed and she turned me away, then the fight with the shifter had taught me a valuable lesson. I badly needed to train harder. Staying alive through sheer luck and my magic popping up to save my ass wasn't a smart move when working for the elite. Sooner or later, one or the other would let me down, and then where would I be? The tattered remains of my leather jacket sat on the couch where I'd dumped it the night before, and my stomach dropped. It was my favorite jacket. Sighing, I headed back into the bedroom and searched within my Narnia closet, finally fighting free with a black hoodie. It wasn't an ideal choice, and it certainly didn't look smart enough for the elite offices, but I was beyond caring. If John had a problem,